Hey, brother, can ya spare the time? I can't decide where we should draw the line. Our family dreams, they are at stake. I can't accept this as our fate. I won't accept this as our fate. As I wish upon the star tonight, will our people ever see the light? Is a new dawn just around the bend? Hey, brother, when's it gonna end? Children to look at us with disappointment and disgust. We want to teach them to carry on, to be strong long after we're gone, to bear the torch long after we're gone. And as I wish upon this star tonight, will our people ever see the light? Is a new dawn just around the bend? Hey, brother, when's it gonna end? Well, we've been bred to stand our ground, to not achieve, no, not back down. I see these people just standing there. They've no worries, no, they've no cares. They don't worry cause they don't care. And as I wish upon this star tonight, will our people ever see the light? Is a new dawn just around the bend? Hey, brother, when's it gonna end? As I wish upon this star tonight, will our people ever see the light? Is a new dawn just around the bend? Hey, brother, when's it gonna end?
White Aryan Resistance Radio calling. White Aryan Resistance Radio calling. White Aryan Resistance Radio calling. This is Terrible Tommy, Tom Metzger, right here in the bunker. Oh, yeah, on the 9th of January, 2015. And it's Freya's Day, Ladies' Day in the bunker, She-Wolf Day, Freya, Friday. Yeah, and guess what? Today is John Metzger's birthday. Yeah, my kid John Metzger, his birthday's today. And he's catching up to me. Yeah, slowly but surely he's catching up to me on this age thing, because I don't get any older. Oh, hell no. We're right here at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. And that's where you send your donations and get them in so we can keep pumping them out. Yeah, and well, today's a banner day because I'm going to finish up Hitler, founder of Israel. How about that? Some of you may say, Jesus Christ, I thought he'd never get over that thing. Then others would say, boy, I learned a lot from that book and the comments he made along the way. And then others are going to say, he didn't read worth a shit. I don't understand him. Okay, but however it works out, here it comes, babe, the end of the book. It appears from all the Hitler's destructive dealings with the Jews, ever since his Vienna days, that he differentiated Eastern Jews, as said Rathenau, the Asiatic hordes, unquote, or simply Heydrich, quote, the mob, from the small minority of the Western Jews, whom he recognized because they supported him in seizing the power with millions of dollars. In 1967, the Institution on German History After the War, unquote, in Tübingen, published a presentation of the German deputy in charge of the four-year plan, who in the former Polish Lemberg was supposed to organize work for a quarter million Jews living there. It said, quote, the negotiations with the contract partner took place in the office of the Armed Forces Transport Commander on Academy Street. Their contingencies were made for the final solution. Sephardic Jews, the Western Jews, as the author sees it, living in Galicia as a minority, were separated and deported by the hundreds with the German help and its allies' airplanes, including entire families. That's how in October 1943, 16 selected Jews from the labor camp in Lublin, the camp was installed on the grounds of a civil airport at Zwarzkowa, Thursday Street, were transported to Spain and from there to the U.S., and among them was a relative of President Roosevelt's advisor, Morgenthau. You know, remember Morgenthau? That's the guy who wanted to totally flatten Germany of everything and turning it into just peasant farming. That's the boy's Morgenthau. Most of the Jews captured in the Western Europe immigrated there during the past century from the East, and therefore the pitiful people who treated by Himmler as Eastern Jews, those who anyway were considered as Western Jews, were sent by Eichmann's men to the Theresienstadt, which didn't look like a concentration camp, nor a hungry Jewish city, for it had its own administration, schools, cultural establishments. Many times the gentlemen of the SS Imperium, who always were money-hungry, made splendid business deals with its Jewish citizens. These secret dealings made the SS chief leader, General Kaltenbrunner, furious, and about this he testified in Nuremberg. Quote, Himmler did the worst things through the Becker, which should be revealed here. They consisted of letting Jews go free after mediation by Becker and the Joint Committee in Hungary, and then to Switzerland, firstly in exchange for warfare materials, secondly in exchange for raw materials, and thirdly in exchange for foreign currency. I heard about these deals in the news center and expressed my opinion immediately, but not to Himmler, because it would have been hopeless, but directly to Hitler, unquote. There was no question about the fact that throughout the whole war, the armament and foreign currency came into the German Reich via Switzerland. With Himmler's orders to stop the extermination, the situation completely changed. The Jew Ginsburg, who writes under the cover name of Berg, after negotiations with the Britons, reported from Hungary that immigration of the Jews to Palestine failed. Quote, Interior Minister Kovarsk insisted on the liquidation of all Jews in the ghetto. The police general, Winkelmann, as the chief of police in Budapest, conferred with Himmler and then requested the Hungarian Interior Minister to come to him. Winkelmann advised Kovarsk that 84,000 Jews in the Budapest ghetto are under the German jurisdiction. Therefore, in the interest of the German Reich, he prohibits its destruction. In the spring of 1944, Himmler tried to extinguish the rumor of exterminations in a speech to over 200 German generals in the Holy Order Castle, Sonthofen, announced that the generals at any time and without notice may inspect any concentration camp and see for themselves that the rumor has no substance. At that time, the SS judges of war, mainly Storm Leader Dr. Morgan and Dr. Reinecke, were already cleaning up the mess. The lower-rank SS commanders who sexually abused Jewish women were degraded and put into the concentration camps. After the war, they came forward as persecuted by the Nazi regime. Dr. Morgan, alarmed by the commander of the security police in Lublin, knew that the SS security teams used to play soccer with a selected group of young Jewish camp policemen, also that they celebrated together festivities, and among the 1,100 Jewish wedding guests were members of the Jewish camp security, in the SS uniforms drinking Martell, a cognac. Quote, with the consumption of delicatessen and alcohol, unusual things were happening there. Unquote. The SS judges as witnesses testified before the surprised court in Nuremberg. The lower-ranking SS stormtroopers leader, a lieutenant, was sentenced to death by the SS justice on the grounds that, quote, he lowered himself to cruel actions which were unworthy of a German and of an SS leader, unquote. This mentioned above Dr. Morgan sued also a commander of the concentration camp Buchenwald, Karl Koch, and sent him to the camp's gallows in front of the mistreated prisoners. The same fate met Hermann Florstadt, a commander of the camp in Majdanek near Lublin. In a short time, 200 verdicts were enforced. Moreover, when the war was over, 600 trials were in progress, among them one against Eichmann and another against the commander of the Auschwitz concentration camp, Rudolf Höss. In 1924, Höss, because of a murder, together with Martin Bormann, later the right hand of Hitler, was sentenced by the State Justice Court to 10 years in prison. After his release, he took revenge in his own way against the SS Holy Order under the skull, which he felt had betrayed him. When imprisoned by the Americans before his execution in Poland, he confirmed in writing whatever Americans wanted. Among his many testimonies, one stated, quote, in concentration camps, slaves were put to work, unquote, although the term slave laborers was never used by the authorities of the German Reich. In Hitler's political and operational staff, the Jewish element was strong. It was also strong at the level of Jewish baiters as well as exterminators. The SS General Erich von Bock-Zelewski, the chief of the anti-partisan units, and the SS General Odilo Globonik, previously a district commander of Vienna known as the Jewish exterminator, were also Jewish mongrels. When one of these perpetrators, the SS General Friedrich Wilhelm Krueger, without any Jewish blood in his veins, moved hundreds of thousands of Jewish defense plant workers under protest of the armed forces from the ghettos to the concentration camps and married a half-Jewish lady, Himmler consoled him, quote, your position in the SS will not be affected in any way, neither by my opinion or by the whole bad luck of your wife's genealogical tree. I give you my solemn assurance in writing that this could not ever happen to you, unquote. With the victorious feelings, the ordinary front soldiers, together with the SS weapons troops, returned home. And at this new stage of their careers, they could have settled the accounts with the past in a different way than did so, calling it denazification of Germany. For under its pawns were hanged and the bureaucrats elevated. Dr. Hans Joseph Marie Globke, the main author, and not just a commentator of the Nuremberg racial law, the basis of all destructive actions, to one of the highest offices in a German Federal Republic after the war. The final solution, Israel. The war was over. Special Jewish units from the USA landed in northern Italy. These units received many years of training at American universities on how to re-educate the Germans. In German families, the father made the decisions. The discipline and order were principles of the German upbringing. Hitler, the Führer, simply transferred that German family system to the state, and that it is how it worked. But this harmed the other nations. Those who came were highly educated and ethical boys. Do not mistake them for the revenge squads, which at the time came from Italy across the Alps on the yellow-painted military trucks with slogans on their banners, no nation, no Reich, no Führer, the Jews are coming. When on the superhighways a bicyclist was spotted, the right door of the heavy truck was opened abruptly, killing the rider. On April 6, 1946, to a large prison camp at Nuremberg, where 36,000 SS men were detained, the Jews delivered bread poisoned with arsenic. 700 prisoners died instantly, and later a few hundred more in agony. With the other gentlemen on that special assignment who were educated at U.S. universities, it was easy to communicate. Thus came to an extensive exchange of experiences with the Germans who stayed in Italy in the war reporters' companies. They were waiting there for new orders and, by the way, taught American colleagues how to form or change minds of other nations. Dark-haired, beautiful girls poured red wine into glasses with these gestures. Friendly international bounds were made. After a few more drinks, the conversations led to God and the whole world, as well as to Hitler's unclear origin and his messianic illusions, and to a strange fact that the powerful American Air Force, with its thousands of flying fortresses, never attempted to destroy any of the camps containing the gas chambers. And that is when one educated young man from the U.S. jumped up with a red face and called across the table to a German propagandist, known among his friends as Walnita, Wild Duck, "But you have done your work," unquote. These people, who came across the Atlantic to change human minds, soon managed to key positions in the newspapers, the radio stations, by themselves, or through their trustworthy agents. And their main purpose was to keep the world shocked with hundreds of thousands of news articles, brochures, books, and so on, full of stories about the extermination of the Jews in Eastern Europe. In effect, the overseas countries opened their gates to the made-for-Europe tired people. Through the temporary camps of numerous charity organizations, they streamed into them. Only England, which wanted to secure her strategic position at the Suez Canal and to keep her empire and her influence in the oil countries, refused to take in those hundreds of thousands of people with tattooed KZ numbers, concentration camp numbers, on their lower left arms, storming the beaches of Palestine. Thus the Exodus began, which derived its name from the old Mississippi steamer used on the eastern Mediterranean Sea for the Jewish cargo. The Jewish terrorist organization spread fear all around. They were supplied with U.S. money and weapons from the European depots and deserted battlefields. In January 1947, the underground group Ergun, National Military Organization, declared war on England. British soldiers and officers were kidnapped, hung, shot in open streets. The British headquarters in Palestine, the British consulate in Rome, the British quarters in Vienna Park Hotel were bombed. On July 23, 1947, before the House of Commons in London, the British Prime Minister Clement R. Attlee said about the bombing of the British headquarters at the King David Hotel in Jerusalem, quote, "Honorable deputies, you must acknowledge these horrifying and brutal murders which have been committed against us in Jerusalem, among the many disgraceful conducts which have been exercised by the Zionist Jews in Palestine. This one was the worst. By this insane action, 93 innocent British officers have died." The Palestinians, who at the same time were exiled from their own country, have learned well how a new state is being founded. During the spring of 47, Dr. Nahum Goldman, the future Zionist leader, at the seventh meeting of the Canadian Jewish Congress, explained to witnesses, to listeners, at the Mount Royal Hotel that, quote, "We insisted on Palestine not because of religious, historical, or sentimental reasons, but because Palestine is a turning table of the three continents, and in the military, political, strategic sense, it is the world center," unquote. Quote, "Besides," added Speaker Goldman, quoting a statement which appeared in the Congressional Bulletin, "the oil reserves in this area are much higher than the whole American continent." Yeah. "To establish Israel, we only have 12 months," said Goldman. "After that, interest of the world in our cause will become weaker." From the German point of view, Adolf Hitler was the goodness preacher, was one of the most frustrated leaders in world history. At least, he was seen as such in German eyes, but with an exception. Millions of war victims attributed to this belief's protagonist reached a culmination within a few years, not centuries. But despite of those sacrifices, the Jewish Bolshevist pestilence set its foot in the heart of Germany. The American army allocated the Thuringia and Saxony to the Red Army, and since then, the Soviet Union is keeping guard at the River Elbe. For 30 years in Berlin, the capital city of the Reich, the military occupying forces have a lot to say which they wouldn't have if the right of the nation to self-determination of concern. Approaching this entire matter from a different perspective, it can be said that Hitler's lifelong dream of a Vienna adolescent has been materialized in splendor, quote, the hatred towards his own kinsmen, unquote, combined with the hatred of his Jewish helpers, Heydrich, Eichmann, and many others, which escalated into the insane extermination. No one can arrange a mass annihilation without sanctions of the Lord, unquote. At last has finished the work of the Lord by founding the state of for the Jews, who were dogged by the ill fortune for over two millennia. On May 14, 1948, 3 years after Adolf Hitler's death and 12 months after Goldman's speech in Canada, the British soldiers took down the Union Jack from the flagstaff of the government buildings in Jerusalem. At midnight, the British highest commissar of Palestine laid down his mandate. At 2 o'clock in the morning, the President of the United States, Harry Truman, acknowledged Israel as a new state. David Gruen from Poland, who called himself Ben-Gurion, a wounded male dove, unquote, as the first president of this resurrected Jewish state, shouted, quote, a Jew who does not live in Israel lives in sin, unquote. And remember, David Ben-Gurion was a Buddhist. He was a Buddhist. The years of street battles were gone. The decades of wars over the living space and secure borders now have begun. And that's the close of that of the book. Now, what do you think? There's a lot of facts and figures in there. And I know the right wing would poo-poo probably the whole book. But I don't think so. I think it makes sense, and I think that most of these facts have been suppressed ever since the 40s in the last century. I think that so many times the predators are able to mask one thing that they want to do by a totally opposite story. And I think this is the opposite story. And the key to it is that the attitude of the Western Jews, which I believe you would call Sephardi, and the Eastern Jews, which are the Ashkenazi. Now, of course, a majority of people don't know anything about it. And a majority of the Jews don't know anything about it. A majority of the Jews swallow the story just like everybody else. But I think all the key issues are here, including Hitler being doped up and half the time making some pretty bad mistakes. You know, I was reading about one last night where he had a couple of genius designer over there designed the V1. He linked up with a genius aeronautical engineer to create the V1. And they wanted to hammer England with them early on, before the terrible debacle in the east of Russia. And Hitler wanted to concentrate on more airplanes, bombers for the east. Now, there was another failed action. If they would have let loose with hundreds of V1s, they could have obliterated England. Or at least the major cities. Now, I'm not for war. I'm totally against it. We never win a war in the long run. White men never win a war. But on the other hand, looking at it from their point of view of military, they got a lot of them going. They had hundreds of them, but they couldn't get them off the ground. Plus the fact that when they were all ready to use the V-1s en masse, along comes Normandy. And they're trying to get these V-1s off, and they're being bombed, and they're having to move around the areas where they're going to shoot those V-1s over there to England. They were having to do all kinds of crazy stuff to make it work, but still they got a few off. But you see, Hitler's timing, whether he wanted to do it, whether he was drugged up and stupid and did it, or whatever it was, his timing was terrible in many cases. So, what, did he throw the thing? Or I just think that Hitler, he's like all politicians. They have good points, they have bad points. And he was a victim of his early life in Austria. And he carried that into his feelings towards other people. And, of course, anybody that says, well, he was trying to defend the Germanic race. You don't defend the Germanic race by killing them, powder bombing them, getting involved in aggressive war. There was no need to invade Poland. Germany was so strong by that time, they would have got everything they wanted from Poland through negotiation. And that's why Chamberlain was so shocked. He couldn't believe it, that Hitler would go against what they had agreed to. So, it's a mess. So that's why we should not get involved in these things. Never. But now, we can't do anything about it. We don't have the power to do anything about it. And we won't have the power to do anything about it for a while, except for, you know, small uprisings here and there that probably will happen as time goes on. Maybe suicide attacks and so forth like that. But as far as changing this destruction of this empire, you're not going to change it. It's got to work its way through. And I won't be around to see it. And hell, a lot of you guys that are younger than me won't be around to see it. But it's going to happen. And there'll be a resurgence of the white race no matter how far we get beaten down. So anyhow, that's... But don't waste all your time reading all this glowing reports about the Third Reich. There were millions of extremely brave and courageous people involved in the Wehrmacht and the Luftwaffe, all that kind of stuff. But all that energy should have been invested in science, technology, education, propaganda, and so forth, and stay within the bounds of Germany. And they'd still be around. So anyhow, and of course, like I keep saying, the attack on Russia was probably the most insane thing that happened during the whole war, because if you've read as much as I have about what was really going on to Russia and what Stalin was saying and all these people, you know it was suicide to go into Russia. So, and plus killing millions of white people, Slavic or not Slavic, you know. Well, that's it. It's over. Now let's see if we can find something else to piss people off with. But I strongly suggest you read this book. Get this book. It's available all over the place in the major book distributing company, usually for around $12 or something like that. The author is Kardel, K-A-R-D-E-L. And then you can look on the internet, there's probably a million people that are saying, oh, he's nuts, he's crazy, he was probably a Jew, it's all bullshit, you know, like that. But use your own brain on this, think it over, see if it doesn't sort of fit what ended up being the facts. Well, old terrible Tommy screwed up again after there's 10 or 15 pages of footnotes and references to other books on this book, Hitler, the Founder of Israel. But I see there's a few pages more of this as postscript, which I think I should cover with you. I know. Will he ever stop? Passions of Ignorance, author of Adolf Hitler, Founder of Israel, in a sarcastic tone and a brief military style, touched on a problem which he encountered with the same time of his life, but did not exhaust all the possibilities because of something having to do with the most persecuted in our time, the truth. This publisher certainly will not either, for the subject matter needs in-depth study. Nevertheless, the author proved that the ideologists of the Nazi movement were unscrupulous one-quarter, one-half, and full-blooded Israelites, more or less assimilated within the Teutonic society. Cardell's work deals with Jews of the Israelite origin as adversaries of Jews of the Judaic origin. The first group is a distinction and symbolically was equipped with the death skulls and the swastikas, the latter with the red stars and sickles and hammers, together with the heathen Megan David. Author's sarcasm is well-founded, for his same time has been entangled in complexities of the human character influenced by the extremities. In its own way, Hitler's character in search of a spiritual domination over extremities and guided by authorities like Jesus Christ was entirely squeezed by the narrow time frame of one generation, which overpowered his passion for the search of goodness at the cost of the others, a virtue common among idealists of any sort. Hitler's character was also squeezed by the so-called Judeo-Christianity, which deals with who is who, nationally, racially, and godly. To better understand Cardell's sarcasm, as well as the whole issue of Judeo-Christianity, one must be an American the way Thomas Jefferson was, overwhelmed by the immensity of our minuscule planet Earth and grandiose of America. He set up a beacon for the new nation, the nature's God, which is still in its infancy, and it will be there for as long as the plenitude of other gods does not stop over flooding America. Among many, one is the most potent, the Yahweh, who 3 millennia before Christ had some importance in the Empire of Elba, the Middle East. Among the Israelites, his name appeared during the time of Moses, although before him the God of Adamites and Israel was El. And Yahweh or Israel was no less important than the gods of Babylon or Egypt, were ruled by monotheistic religion of Egypt's god Amon, as 9 millennia earlier ruled God Horus. And he, Yahweh, was very competitive with other god, Balaam. As it will be seen later, Yahweh and or Israel were Iblis names for the gods. First name was attributed to the man and second to the sun, S-U-N. With such a plenitude of gods, it is necessary to mention that their multitude was conditioned by environmental factors and cultural isolation. This incorrectly creates an overall picture of polytheism, although in fact there was practiced monotheism confined to specific areas of influence. Local leaders needed the highest authority to explain their positions. Thus, it came to a creation of many independent gods and tribes, large, small community groups, cities, and countries. Not many of those gods, of course, through economical, cultural, or military expansions, could become the universal one god. And as of now, we are still a long way from discovering or inventing such a one. But Yahweh certainly was taken from Eblens, and has a purpose of dividing the entire world. The whole world spoke the same language. Wait a minute. I'm going to skip some of this because they're going into the Moses and all that crap, because Moses never existed. He was mythical. He was Mises in Babylon, and he became Moses with the Jews, but he was a mythical character. as the Bible presents it, Yahweh is an imaginary God of lies, greed, hatred, and vengeance, creating turbulence in the human character. This turbulence starts working early among the chosen, unchosen. When to the newborn of mixed marriages it's said that he or she does not belong to the community of the chosen. Thus, at the moment, a hatred to the own kind is implanted. It is not inflicted by violence or abuse like circumcision, but by the simple word chosen. This is a phenomenon which the author claims must be overcome by a Jew within, that is, the Jewishness rejected within, which in the case of Hitler's Israel-Jewish collaborators led to the Gentiles' unholy behavior and mass murders. Thus, this very word, chosen, gave birth to Christianity. Similarly, as Yahweh's cheating gave birth to Mohammedism and to the Hitlerite Nazism. Even Americans are affected by this phenomenon, as it is seen in front of TV screens. It is visible in distorted families whose children are rebelling against their parents and society because they are rejected as chosen. To display their hatred towards the chosenness in the extreme with swastikas tattooed on their chests. To better understand this phenomenon, it would be worthwhile to approach it from two sides, its religious and non-religious aspects. The aspect is not new, and it reaches its heights as presented in the Post. According to the Talmud, Jesus Christ was the illegitimate child conceived by a Roman soldier. Thus, in the Judean community, he was an outcast, and so naturally he rebelled and overcame his Jewishness within. With such a personality, he answered an appeal among the people who were searching for a universal God. Well, of course, he was mythical. Among other things, it should be noted that Jesus claimed that my mission is only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel, as if only through the house of Israel people might be liberated. Similar disillusionment overcame Mohammed when he discovered that his chosenness was stolen from him by Yahweh himself. Yahweh cheated an unaware Isaac so that his patriarch, instead of the blessings of Esau as a progenitor of Arabs, blessed Jacob in the house of Israel. Since then, the Arab nations waged war against descendants of Jacob and Israel. This is getting a little complicated. Getting back into this religious stuff. The Hitlerite Nazism was founded on a similar basis and founded not only on the lost birthrights, the chosenness, but built upon ideological differences between Israelites and Essenic Jews who were wrestling among themselves over the private ownership, which since the advent of communism reached its climax in the Bolshevik Revolution. This hatred-creating phenomenon praised by Hitler, undoubtedly, Jesus encountered too. He even was elevated by Hitler to the status of honorary Aryan. The same motive for hatred is also present in the song of the only God in the Bhagavad Gita at the holy battle of Kurukshetra in 3000 BC. God Krishna urged warrior Arjuna to exterminate his relatives and kinsmen for their attachment to the worldly material goods. Author H. Cardell, by the circumstances, is also tangled in a hatred to a point where he curses the Bolshevik pestilence. He does it not only for reasons of its godlessness, but also for its defiance of the private ownership in which defense he and millions of other German soldiers shed their blood. But he did not take into account that those hordes of Judeo-Bolshevik pestilence were also up to an idea of creating a paradise on earth without the golden calf for themselves. Into such a horrible and very costly entanglement fell not only the author, for according to him it consumed 50 million lives. Well, there's quite a bit more of this, but the guy who wrote this is not really a friend of the author, Cardell, and he gets off into all this mythical Jesus and all that kind of crap. I'm going to have to read that again. I'm not going to put it out there. I'm not going to bore you with it. You can get a hold of the book and read it yourself. I watched a film last night out of the Centurion section of Hulu. It was a 1952 movie out of Israel. I mean, not out of Israel. I've been reading about Israel so much. Out of Italy. The Italians do great jobs on very emotional, heart-rendering and warming things that people get into. And in the movie, there was all these senior citizens who were in bad shape in Rome. And all these old guys got out on the street and marched towards the government building. And obviously, at the end, the soldiers stopped them and tried to disperse them, and did disperse them. But the main thing caught my ear was the soldiers said, well, you got to have a permit. And when the old guys said, well, they wouldn't give us a permit. The irony of that, I mean, you know, you've heard it a million times. The irony of telling a man to have free speech, you have to have a permit. That means you have no free speech at all. The idea of even the left or right or anybody else that marches in the street in this country and has to get a permit or they put them in jail. Well, that's to negate free speech. You can't have one and you can't have them both at the same time. You get it? I mean, come on. If you have free speech, you have free speech. And if you have free assembly, you have free assembly. There should be no permit involved. And if the powers that be insist on it, then they should be taken out. They should be do whatever you have to do to subdue them. And, of course, that's where it gets sticky because whether it's right or left or whoever, and they can march by the thousands. But at the point where they should say enough and go for the throat, they don't do it. So the system always has the excuse, well, they marched. And then when they got too many of them and, you know, it was sort of dangerous, you know, well, we to the people and public safety, well, we told them, you got to have a permit. You know, and then we won't. Then they wouldn't give you a permit. That's the point. Like this Occupy struggle, of which I supported, incidentally. They had a lot of people, but at the point where they were told they couldn't do it anymore, and they ripped up their camps and everything else in the parks, that was the time to go for the throat. Yeah, I know they would have shot down hundreds of people, but when they did, when they would do that, there would be hundreds more join the struggle, or at least the more determined people, the more realistic people. But that's where they got you over a barrel all the time. You never get anywhere because you get the, and then they dissipate your emotion and intentions by saying you're doing something illegal. We're all for free speech, you know, us government officials and the cops. We're all for free speech, but we have to approve the free speech. Fuck you, we're marching on City Hall. And we're going to get bloody about it, okay? Incidentally, in that Centurion section of Hulu with all these old movies, you can go all the way back, and they got all these black and white foreign movies, and a lot of movies that were made during about World War II from a Russian point of view, and Polish, Czechoslovakian point of view, and all that are very interesting to see from the other side what was going on there. And there's a hell of a lot of these movies that are up there, and it's very interesting. Very, very interesting. I think I mentioned this before about Merkel of Germany exclaiming this, what happened in France was an attack on free speech. Now, that's hilarious, but it's enough to make you cry because there is no free speech unless you have total free speech. And for Merkel, while she's throwing National Socialists in prison over there, or anybody who maybe put on a swastika or something like that, or say something good about the leaders in Germany during World War II, or anything like that, they throw you in jail. And yet she has the goddamn gall to stand there and say, oh, this is attack on free speech. It's enough to gag a maggot. It's amusing to hear all these Republicans and conservative Republicans all bemoaning these black demonstrations when, in fact, they're loving every minute of it because it feeds their agenda. And they're probably putting money into it. Oh, it's horrible. And, we sort of understand maybe a little bit why they're marching, but, it's horrible. It's horrible. Let's take the cameras out there and show these people what crude and crass people they are. But there are only a few like that. There are not very many like that. The Republicans are getting ready for 2016, and they're going to use all this kind of stuff. They love it, baby. They love it. Just like it's been done for decades. FBI informants, FBI instigators and agitators, black, white, whatever, they're all out there. They're all doing their thing, and all these demonstrations are full of people who are working with the government, and they're pushing these demonstrations in whatever way they want them. Of course, they're playing Russian roulette because one of these demonstrations might get away from them, really get away from them sometime. We'll see. Go, black baby. Yeah. Well, the order's getting some support in Britain. How about that? Tom, you should have $40 in your P.O. box via snail mail by now or the next couple of days. I just thought I'd let you know there is a demonstration in London for Gary Yarborough. I'll be going with a group. I support National Action and will send you a video. I asked the organizer of the demonstration about Mr. Scutari's parole status. He didn't know. I said I'd ask you. Well, he doesn't have a parole yet, but he's hoping for one this next year, during this year maybe, and I hope so too, but I'm a pessimist when it comes to this. In fact, I'm a pessimist about a lot of things. But they want to keep our friends in there as long as they possibly can keep a hold of them, preferably till they die. And of course, we've had a couple of them die already. But this is how bestial our enemies are. They are bestial, and they're bestial against not just us, but blacks and others. So you can't underestimate the depravity of the American prison system and the wardens who run them. And these are concentration camps is what they are. And sometimes guys want to ask for mercy from these people. Don't ask for mercy. You'll never get any mercy from them. Unless you totally capitulate and swear how you were totally wrong about the race and you'll never do it again and you love the Jews, you love everybody, you love the liberals and race mixers, and then they might give you parole. You know, I get an unending flow of crying from the right wing about how horrible the Islamists are. Oh, this is horrible. Oh, this is horrible. But, you know, the Islamists have been killing each other for thousands of years, on and off. But the question remains to me, after European and American, especially American forces, have bombed and pillaged and kicked the doors in and murdered hundreds of thousands of people in these countries that happen to be Islamist, and you get all upset because they chop one of your heads off? You get all upset because they invade a magazine office and kill 14 people? Well, it's terrible. But they're there. It's the usual thing. You got two forces, one that says we got to love them to death, and the other said we got to kill all of them. So you confuse the Islamic people. You confuse them. You import them by the millions, 5 million in France, and you continue to bomb the shit out of their countries illegally, at least naturally it's illegal, and then you cry when some of them say, wait a minute, they're killing my relatives back home. They're flattening everything. They're blowing up the houses and everything. I'm going to do something about it. Well, the right wing, most of the right wing never seem to get this through their fucking heads. Logic. Believe me, you got to use logic in these kind of things. Were they doing this 40 years ago or 30 years ago? Were the Islamists doing that? Maybe a little bit, but hardly any. I mean, there weren't 5 million of these Islamists in France and probably 2 or 3 million in Britain. And I don't know whether there's a million of them in Germany, but there's probably a lot of them. You bring on your own problems, Whitey. And then you think you can be like colonialists and just pattern bomb the damn countries over North Africa? This is all insane. It's insane. And then right-wingers will send me shit, even what right-wing racists, and cry about it. Oh, it's terrible. Those Islamists killed 14 people. Yes, but you killed hundreds of thousands of them. And you expect them not to retaliate? Oh, shit. I'm telling you. It's a crazy, it's an insane asylum. Do you remember Bob Beckel, or have you watched him on The Five on the Fox Crazy Network? Sometimes I agree with different people. He tends to be a liberal. But let me play this clip that was recently on The Five.
The two publications that have had direct results of their work and murder were both liberal newspapers or magazines in
right.
France
True.
And in Denmark.
Right.
And it's been the left, frankly, in Europe to be willing to stand up and say something. The conservatives have turned their tail and run. But having said that, have you noticed that poll in France that young people were much more predisposed towards radical Islam than older people? I think it's sort of like in the United States, where younger people today, it's not at all unusual for people to see multicultural dating, for example.
Yeah.
Back when I was young, you didn't date out of your own ethnicity. But in Europe and other places, this mingling that's going on here, younger people are beginning to find this acceptable. And that's the thing that is sort of scary, because they are getting exposed to it on a daily basis.
I don't know if you can compare with...
Well, let's see about this. Cop down in South Carolina has been arrested on domestic assault violence. He's a black cop, because he became angry that his girlfriend's abortion had taken too long. Officer Sierra Shivers was placed on unpaid leave by the North Charleston Police Department pending the outcome of an internal investigation. An affidavit accuses a 38-year-old cop, Shivers, of punching the unidentified woman approximately 5 times in the left side of her face the morning of January 3rd. Investigators said Shivers had given the woman a ride to the woman's health clinic to terminate her pregnancy, but became angry about 11 a.m. because the procedure had taken too long. Well, the woman was white, a young white woman. And as long as these white women want to lay down with these, whatever you want to call them, I guess I call them niggers, then that's going to happen to them. And there's nothing that anybody can do about it. And in fact, Mother Nature says what comes around goes around. And so it's a hard lesson white women are going to have to put up with if they're going to play the interracial game. But I'll bet you this black cop gets off fairly easy. I'll bet you he does, instead of being immediately terminated. On the other hand, this black officer, a cop, whatever, fuzz, was doing a good thing if she, this white girl, was pregnant with his black kid. To that, I give him credit for that. Yeah, get an abortion, for Christ's sake. That's why I've been recommending for a long time to invest in abortion mill companies in the non-white areas of the city. And they'll say, oh, look how horrible Tom Metzger is. No, as much as your you know, as long as you are using gene kidnapping or genetic hijacking and doing it on purpose for a racial reason, because more than one black leader said that raping a white woman is an act of war, really against white men. Well, then I would be not embarrassed at all to invest my money, what little I've got, in the black abortion mills in the black community. Or the Hispanic community, not the Hispanic, but the mestizo community, which do a lot of the same things the blacks do against our race. So what's the problem? Old Bull Connors from down there in Alabama would roll over in his grave if he knew what cops were becoming today in this country. A whole race mixed flood of these cops that whenever they get a chance are going to, well, I don't know, maybe not any more than the white cops. We got a bunch of insane psychopath white cops that are have no problem beating to death a white guy, a white working class guy. And they might even give a black person, the black target, a little more break than a white guy. And don't tell me it's any different than that. That's why your enemy is of your own household. Your most extreme, bloodthirsty enemy is other white people. That's why they say, Metzger, you're a hater. Yeah, I'm a hater. I hate my enemies, no matter what color they are, and I love my friends. That's it. Simple as that. I don't deny hating. All these other right-wing racial people running around. Well, I run the Ku Klux Klan, but I don't hate anybody. You know, you hear that all the time. I'm running the Ku Klux Klan, or I'm in the Stormfront, or I'm that, but I don't advocate violence. Well, I advocate violence under certain conditions. I don't advocate non-productive violence, but violence in the defense of the race, in actual defense of the race. Not like that VNN Glenn Miller going out and shooting up the town and shooting white people, that he doesn't have any idea what their racial views are. That's the insanity of the right. Like when they asked George Lincoln Rockwell, are you violent? He said, well, you punch me in the nose and I'll show you how violent I can be. That pretty well sums it up. We're being punched in the mouth every day. Punched in the nose, punched in the back of the head. We're being sucker punched from morning till night in this country. And then they say, well, why would you hate some? Why do you hate? You know? Well, our enemies hate us. They use every excuse they can to do whatever they can to us and throw the guys like the order in prison committing the same alleged crime. They would be out. If a nigger did it, they'd be out in half the time. I remember when I was being charged with illegal assembly up in L.A. Went on for 9 years. We fought that case, and my lawyer said, "If that had been," he said, "I've seen black guys go up to a front door and shoot people dead and get less sentencing than most white people do." But you see, the press is the most evil movement in the country. Corporate press, if I was to be king for a day and I had one act that I could get done initially and then they put me to death, I would eliminate the corporate media. There would be no corporate media in this country. Only individual small media supported locally and so forth like that, which would tend to be far more fair. But the corporate media is, along with religion and along with greed of Wall Street, are our major enemies. One thing I liked about when the order was on the run and they picked off that idiot in Denver, which I disagree with because he was a non-anything as far as I'm concerned, but they did it. But I noticed I was doing a lot of radio interviews and going into the radio station. Before that happened, there were no real locks on the doors where you went in to do an interview in a radio station. after he was knocked off by the order, every radio station in the country started putting locks on all their studio doors. So I guess that violence does intimidate people. Well, I see that Maryland's first female Christian bishop is charged with manslaughter, drunk driving, and a hit-and-run death. Boy, praise the Lord. Pass the ammunition. Well, that's about it for Freya's Day. I'll be back tomorrow, Saturn's Day. I'm not sure what we'll have on here tomorrow, but we'll have something. And if we haven't offended everybody today, I always say, tune in tomorrow, and I'll do my best to offend somebody. 14-5. I have nothing to say, you goddamn Stasi cops.